Hey, I've got a special guest today, Richard Steen, and we're going to talk about why CISOs keep missing the next big security challenge and how we can fix that. So stick around, you're going to love this show. Hello and welcome to another episode of CISO Tradecraft, the podcast that provides you with the information, knowledge, and wisdom to be a more effective cybersecurity leader. My name is G. Mark Hardy. I'm your host for today, and our special guest for the brand new year is Richard Steen. Welcome to the show.
Hey, G. Mark. It's great to see you and be here again.
Yeah, we were on a panel together at RSA, and I was just going through my notes. It was like, that was 2014. That was a while ago. And I'm pretty sure we've crossed paths from time to time, but I think that's the last time we actually sat down and had a discussion. But today, what we want to talk about is kind of the issues that I think you'd be an expert on. I mean, as a CISO, you've got all these vendors that are out there, the different categories that are being created, the analyst reports, and somehow it feels like late to the game, that we're not quite keeping up on all these changes in technology, cybersecurity, and things like that. So I think you're probably the person to help straighten us out a little bit. So first of all, before we get going, for people who don't know you, and I can't imagine somebody doesn't know about you, but tell me a little bit about your background and what you're doing right now.
Yeah, so I'm a industry analyst through and through, and I got that when I joined Gartner in 2000. Very young man back then. I was probably 42 years old or something like that. And I was the second analyst that covered security at Gartner. So I had 4 years there and moved on from there to Webroot Software, if you remember that name. Left Webroot as soon as I realized this wasn't the one that was going to go public, and started IT Harvest, which is also probably not the one that's going to go public. But it allowed me to do what I love to do at Gartner, which is, you know, talk to people and public speaking, writing, without the editorial oversight that Gartner imposes. So, but the one thing I vowed to do as I started, I said, okay, this is going to be different than Gartner because I'm going to actually use data, right? I'm going to collect all the knowledge on the area I cover, which is cybersecurity, and have it in one place. And that was a spreadsheet on my laptop for years. And then when Google Sheets came about, we moved it to Google Sheets so we had to have other people collaborate with us. And by 2020, when I published the first edition of Security Yearbook, which this is the most recent, I published that directory in the back of the book. So, and, you know, right from the Google Sheet. And then 3 years after that, met Maximilian, who is my CTO. He was a freshman in college, and I gave him the task of creating an app that's better than a Google Sheet for interacting with all this data. And back then, it was 3,000 vendors. And it took him 2 weeks to do that, and we were in business. We just went to market and changed the whole makeup of who we are and what we do, and we sell access to a SaaS platform for researching the entire cybersecurity industry. We've evolved significantly and added cybersecurity products as well. So there are, in case you wonder, there are just under 4,000 vendors that we track and 11,400 products.
Wow. And now you started IT Harvest, what, 2005, right? So you've been doing this a while.
Yeah, 20 years.
And 20 long years of really perfecting the art. And as you'd say, with that many vendors, with that many products out there, it seems like an almost impossible task for a CISO to kind of understand the industry, if you will. So the other thing also is that a lot of people think that, nothing new under the sun. I think it was the head of the patent office in 1890 said, yeah, nothing more can be invented. Everything that can be invented can be invented. So how do we help CISOs who think that, yeah, nothing new is coming, that, you know, what we have today is what we're going to be here in 2, 3, 5 years.
Yeah, I think it's hubris to think that we've got this figured out. I certainly don't think that we have it figured out, and I don't think that I've seen everything, right? Because every single day somebody introduces me to their new startup, you know, they take a new approach to something. There's a new problem that I did not know about, and they address it, and they've got new ways to do it. So, and I think that is a frustration for CISOs, right? Because, or rather, it's frustrating for me to see CISOs complaining on LinkedIn that they talk to so many vendors, right? It's like, come on, there are 4,000, so you're not going to talk to them all. I don't know who you're talking to. And yes, there are a lot, but that's what industry analysts are for, right? They have to talk to all the vendors, and then you talk to them, and or you know, and, or you talk to your peers because you're all talking to them all the time. And yet, you know, Gartner only has 12,000 customers. So, you know, if the CISOs at those customers use Gartner, that would be a total of 12,000, right? There's several million companies that need to buy security products. So the market's underserved by the analyst firms as well.
Yeah, and I think it's a very good point you made, because as CISOs, I see stuff up on LinkedIn. He said, if you are a vendor, stop trying to get a meeting with me as my CISO. Go talk to my staff. Go talk to things like that. Yeah. When you try to muscle your way in there, I immediately don't want to buy you. At the same time, I walked the floors of Black Hat and RSA. I was at Black Hat 1 and Black Hat 2 back when Jeff Moss started back in 97, 98. And so, and then RSA, been picked around as we spoke there together. And it just amazed me how it's gone from just a handful of merchants. So a little quick side story. So in 1985, I took a course from Professor Lance Hoffman at George Washington University. I think he's still around, Professor Emeritus. And it was like the only master's degree computer security, I didn't call it cyber, computer security course I could find anywhere. And one of the things we had to do is a project for the course. I mean, it's a master's level thing. And one guy wrote some software. It was a quantitative risk assessment that became Risk Calc, or became a commercial product. Somebody else did this. Well, I, at the time, had just started work for Booz Allen. And so I said, well, I'm going to go to a computer security conference. Back then, there was exactly one. It was in Chicago that year. It was the 8th annual one. I got to remember who it was who presented it. And I gathered up information on every single cybersecurity vendor that existed, all 32 of them.
I had been there. I think it was in Trust that put it on.
Yeah, and it was like 32 companies total that were in this space. And I remember specifically one of them had an encryption product that was based on the knapsack problem. And any mathematician will tell you that there's a general solution for it. So overnight, when that paper was published, the entire category was useless because it was, you know, everybody could just like hack it. So we've come from 32 to 4,000, and it's would be great if my 401k did that, because I certainly wouldn't still be working at this level today. But as we look at all those vendors out there and things such as that, you had mentioned before, and you've got the security yearbook. You started that in 2020. We're now coming up, presumably working on the 2026 version, hopefully a time for RSA. If the printer and the publisher all cooperate with you.
Actually, the big news is the publisher doesn't want to publish it this year. So, and I had scheduled a whole week to go up to Mackinac City, which is what I do to write it. And now what do I do with that week, right? I carved it out. I've got no meetings, or very few anyways. So I decided to write another book. So I've written, and we're now editing Guardians of the Machine Age, a book on AI security.
Interesting. I would love to look forward to that coming out. Does that mean there won't be a book in 2026 for?
That's correct. Yeah, you have, if you want
the security yearbook,
etc., you got to get the 2025 version, of which I'm told by the publisher that there are lots of copies sitting in their warehouse. Which is why.
All right, so Wiley Publisher, yeah, go ahead and get that. We've already gotten a nice little plug for your book. So here's the thing. As we go through and look at stuff, when you started cataloging the industry, you came up with that security yearbook. What was it that surprised you, if anything, about that was? It was like the first year you publish it, and then 1,000 people say, hey, you forgot me, so you had to add them the next year? Or does it say, or what is it?
I don't get very many of those, hey, you forgot me, because, but I do get that when I publish, like on LinkedIn, I'll publish a list of companies in India. And a whole bunch of people say, what about this one? What about that one? You know, and usually I get 20% more from every time I do that. From creating this every year, what surprises me is, even though we know in our gut that there's a lot of change in our industry, but just how massive it is constantly, right? So every year there are 300 to 400 acquisitions. So like 10% of the industry changes hands in some way every year. So that's a big number, and it's hard to keep track of 300 or 400 vendors that got acquired. You know, we don't remember them. That's one of the reasons I started doing this is I hated to be unable to track vendors that are no longer with us, right? It's like they came and went, and now nobody remembers that there was a company called Santa Security that took kind of a DNA approach to, server protection. And so there's that means there are going to be other startups that try the same thing. And it really would help if they had a history to tell them why the last one failed, and maybe they got to do something different this time if they're going down that, memory call mapping that Santa did. So acquisitions, they're about the same number of new fundings every year. And then about 160 to 200 disappear, go out of business. Some of those are the ones that got acquired, but quite a few just never got off the ground. Right, the two founders get together, let's do this, create a web page, LinkedIn page, maybe get a little funding, and then doesn't work out, and they take jobs somewhere else. That's how I have to determine that they're really out of business, because the web page might be up, the LinkedIn page might be there, but there are no employees on the LinkedIn page, and if you track down the founders, they're working at Booz Allen. So,
yeah, I think I still have my startup page for cardtokill.com. It was a company I started back in 2014 to do credit card fraud prevention. And for various reasons I won't get into here, I never got the traction I needed. And at some point they said, yeah, put a fork in it, you're done. But I sort of just kind of leave it there because I thought the idea was great. And I realized that, there was the execution and the team and everything else. And maybe you're right. It could serve as a warning to others, like kids, don't try this at home. Or it might be a template to say, hey, here's where the mines are. So if you went this way instead of that way, you'd be okay. One of the things that I find fascinating with AI is just the emergence of so many new tools, new capabilities. Manus just got acquired. They went from zero to 100 million in 8 or 9 months. I was an early adopter. I was on a waiting list. This is really cool. And all of a sudden, it just got absorbed. But what about categories in general? Are we seeing a rapid emergence of new categories like we would have back in the old Gartner Magic Quadrant days? Or, in fact, is Gartner really, and now I'm going to get a semi, I don't know if it would be a political question, but a lot of companies, they say, you are defined by the category in which Gartner puts you in, whether you agree with it or not. Those are your peers, those are your competitors. Do you believe that Gartner still has that much clout today to define the industry segments? And if not, who is defining them?
Yeah, I believe Gartner is the only one that can define industry segments. Unfortunately, they do that a lot. And they do it without... So when they define a new category, they list representative vendors in the category. So they don't have to do the work that I do to identify all the vendors, right? I'm very motivated by having complete data sets. I want to find them all. I don't care how small they are. They got to be there because startup founders are really, really smart people, really, really driven people. And a large percentage of these are going to succeed and be products that people should know about. So Gartner will take 10 out of 150 and say, this is the category. This is what the current, six-letter acronym represents, and this is why these guys belong in the category. And it's annoying to me because I've already got all those vendors, and I've already put them in something else. And Gartner customers want to immediately go to my platform and say, okay, give me all the DERP vendors, so digital risk protection. And I pick on that one particularly because the one category I had focused on in like 10 years ago was threat intelligence. It was an emerging category. It was growing at 40% year over year based on my numbers. So I put together, you know, the complete list and a report. I actually tried my hand at selling reports. And so I had them all. And then Gartner comes along and it says, we're going to call it digital risk protection. And because you need three letters and an acronym. My problem with the acronym is it's, well, of course it's digital. So, you know, none of us work in analog stuff, right? Unless you're doing radio, and even that's all digital now. And then, of course, risk is extremely problematic. It's like nobody knows what that is and can't quantify it, can't do anything with it whatsoever. And why in the world would we want to protect a risk of any sort, right? We want to mitigate risk. We want to eliminate risk. We want to damp them down. We want to soak them in water. We do not want to protect them. So they took a perfectly logical threat intelligence. We give you IOCs. We give you DNS records. We give you the chat logs of bad guys in the deep and dark web. We all know what that is. DRP is meaningless. Nothing. One of my friends let his marketing team switch their entire description of what they do into DRP, and they stopped getting new business because nobody Googles DRP. They look, I need IOCs. I need leaked passwords. You search for those things. Anyways, sorry you pushed.
No, out. It's a good little rant, but so because that was one of the things that I have observed when I'm talking to companies, and I walk the floor a lot, because one of the things I like to do is I always like going all the way back to that experience from, 40 years ago when I was looking the floor of that the CSI show or whatever it was, looking at the vendors, is just the proliferation of organizations. But then I see in these, some of these young founders, these young startups, it's like, man, if I could only share with you some of the scars and the lessons learned and, you know, don't do this and do this. And what I would like to do is I would walk up, and I'll do this at RSA, and I'll look at somebody's display and I'll say, you do tit-tit-tit with this and this and that. And I goes, yeah, you're right. And I said, you're about 1 in 10 that I could actually figure out what you do by what you say. Everything else is fluff, marketing stuff, and hype, and things like that. And you want them like, what in the world do you do? And like, here, have a tchotchke. It's like, I'm not here for the tchotchkes. I'm here to understand different segments. So as we look at this, you know, fractal nature of cybersecurity business segments and the addition and the changing and the morphing of the names and the fact that we may not be in charge of our own destiny as startup owners, at least in terms of where we go, what is it you think CISOs maybe are missing or misunderstanding about what's out there in the market? And how do we set them straight so they start looking and identifying the things that are going to help most instead of maybe what's being hyped the most?
Yeah, great question. You know, to me, the approach that I would use if I was a CISO was I'd start with a list of all the vendors, and then I'd narrow it down because I don't, you know, okay, the ones in China, we're not going to deal with, or the ones in Russia or Iran, right? We know we can't deal with those, so let's get rid of those. And it's not our company culture to work with startups, you know, with 10, 15 people, so we get rid of those. By the time you're done, you'll have the same list that Gartner has if you're a conservative company, which is, you know, you just rattle them off. You're going to be looking at Palo Alto, Fortinet, SentinelOne, Cisco, you know, we all know these guys. And if that's your desire, and if you have a predilection to buy from one vendor and basically be held to task by that one vendor. If you are one who is focused on, no, I want to buy the best thing for this problem, right? And we got a problem with vulnerability, so I want to buy the best, which is the best vulnerability scanner and, you know, workflow processing so I can get rid of my vulnerabilities. And, you know, you'll look at, you don't have to then look at just Tenable and Rapid7, right? What's the number? I think 139 other vulnerability solutions out there. And you can look at them, and if you had the data, you could say, well, these guys, look at these guys. They don't have any extra funding this year, and yet they've grown 40% in headcount. Somebody likes what they're doing. Let's talk to them. Of course, mm-hmm. You know, also talk to your peers and see, or their customers, and see who they've used. I think that's it's critical that you can't just sit back and let vendors come and tell you, or your reseller, distributor, integrator come and tell you what you need. You have to be looking internally and understand what you're dealing with and look especially at the threat actors. And I bet you anything, the first thing is you don't know what the threat actors are doing on your network. So there's a big hole, right? You should know what they're working on. And maybe they're working on some, you know, new way to sneak in during a DDoS attack. And so maybe you should beef up your DDoS. So call up, Cloudflare and ask them what they've got for you. And then if you knew that, then you would know when you talk to some startup coming out of Mossad or Unit 8200 in Israel, where the guys who invented all these techniques for attacking people are saying, hey, believe me, this can be done and we've done it. And this is, we also have the solution to it. So if you want to stop that problem, buy from us.
Interesting. Yeah. Because Rob Lee with Dragos, I remember talking to him because I worked with him as a SANS instructor for a while. And once it appeared that he was on a path upward, they're like, okay, we're going to give you a quadruple promotion and make you a fellow because we want to be associated with you. And smart business there. But Rob, who's now back in the Army Reserve, is, I guess, is a lieutenant colonel because he was an Air Force officer, did one tour of duty for me and said, wait a minute, I'm somebody else's advanced persistent threat. But I ought to be able to protect my clients against the other advanced persistent threats. And just like we look at NSA or 8200 or any other of these seed locations where people come out with these skills and capabilities that were developed, and they form their own business. Now, my partner here for CISA Tradecraft, Ross Young, had just spent a year with Team 8. And this is an Israeli-based incubator and things such as that. So got to meet a lot of interesting startups, and a lot of them came from that community. And it's a whole lot of effort to tell a busy CISO who's got to deal with getting all of this risk managed, trying to communicate with the board, overseeing budget this time of year, et cetera, say, oh, by the way, go try to figure out what are the 99 companies that are in this space and select one. But work for people like you. And I think the analyst model, this is really why I wanted to have you on, because I don't know if I've had an analyst here in all these podcasts that I've done. But I got a great deal of respect for what you do because it helps to provide a locus of information that says, hey, wait a minute, this is curated. This isn't just a Google search. And I think the potential competition, which I'd be curious to get your viewpoint on this, is someone's going to say, hey, instead of just saying, hey, Google, it's hey, ChatGPT, or hey, AI, go do this for me. What is it that I get with a human analysts like you that I'm never going to get with some sort of prefabricated answer that I'm going to get out of an AI tool?
Ooh. So that is a scary question for me to contemplate.
It is.
For the, we started using AI as soon as it was available. As soon as it was API access to ChatGPT 3.5, we asked it to do a task that we are struggling with, which was to write a description of all 3,000 vendors. You know, so it took me 4,000 hours just to get them all in the database, right? And decide what they did, right? Because you mentioned their websites. It's like, imagine spending hours and hours every single day staring at these websites trying to figure out what the hell they do. So I did that for 4,000 hours. To write a description of each one would probably take another 4,000 hours. And that's not 2 years, right? It's nobody can sit down and write for 8 hours a day. Of rather boring stuff like that. So I was contemplating hiring 10 students through this program in Canada. But then I'd have to read everything that they wrote too. So Maximilian tapped into ChatGPT, created some great prompts, said, you know, you can't even use the word leading in the description, you know, no superlatives. And it wrote 3,000 descriptions in 72 hours and cost $450. And I was sold. I was like, oh my God, all in. AI is going to change the world. So I test it every single time there's a new model that comes out. I go to the model and I say, give me a list of all cybersecurity companies headquartered in Canada. And the latest models have gotten pretty good. They've stopped just screwing up completely, right? Companies that don't exist. And Or my favorite is it kept saying Fortinet's in Canada. It's like, yes, there is a Canadian corporation for Fortinet, but it's a subsidiary and that doesn't count. And the latest 5.2 doesn't make that mistake, but it will not be complete. It will not, if you ask it for a complete list of anything, it can't, it refuses.
It's a cutoff date. Yeah.
Yeah. So it says, I'll give you 10. And how do you like those? I'll give you another 10. So you can get there, but a lot of work, right? Instead of just dropping down the menu, Canada, boom, you're done. So, but it won't be long, right? The one thing I've learned about AI, and it's my just the way I think about AI, is if you can't do it today, just wait, because it doubles in capacity every 2.5 months. It doubles in intelligence.
Sound like tribbles. You know, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, and off you go.
Exactly. So so there is that problem. And right now, of course, the famous earnings call, August 5th, that Gartner had, and a analyst from UBS asked him, how are you building a moat or a defense against the threat from AI cutting into your analyst business? They didn't answer the question. They put it on pause or mute and then did not come back for 30 seconds. And I've got back your time to their stock dropped $5 billion market cap an hour later because they couldn't answer that question. So if you listen to them now, and if you notice, somehow I got subscribed to Gartner's marketing literature. All they do is talk about AI this, AI that, but it's the analysts that are doing that work. Of course, the analysts are all over it, but the company itself doesn't necessarily have a path forward. So,
and what you bring up is a very interesting conundrum, but a lot of things that we face, that is CISOs, security leaders, we have a better understanding of technology than most of the other C-level executives in an organization. I mean, the CFO is going to know finance a whole lot better. The COO is going to know how to do production a whole lot better, but we've had our niche. The challenge that we see is that we can't just operate in a vacuum. We can't say, hey, I'm going to take AI and make all my cybersecurity tools AI enhanced. Really, the benefit is to say, let's suck in the entire business model and look at what we're doing as an organization and how can we optimize, strategize for a new world that's changing, recognizing that our competition is going to be doing this, whether or not we do it. And we've got to do it well, because we're not going to get a second chance if somebody does a flanking maneuver and all of a sudden the bottom drops out of the market. Everybody said, but we're the best buggy whip manufacturer in America. How could people not be buying from us?
Yeah. And that's the worry that McKinsey should have. They should wake up and read about that every single day. And I think people conflate McKinsey and Gartner, right? Because Gartner's got consulting, which is a minor thing of what they do. So I think there is a challenge there, but it's not. I think there's also another challenge, is one I bring to the table, which is, where's your data? You've got to have data, and you can't rely on either consumers or vendors to provide the data, right? You've got to do your own research to find this stuff. Because Gartner is still, you know, for the very, very large companies that are their customers, they provide that. Insurance for making big decisions. They always have, right? I've got to make SAP or Oracle. And the odds are, you know, 99% the project's going to be way over budget and late. And you don't want to get fired because you made the wrong choice. And so therefore, you make the choice that Gartner recommends.
It's the CYA quadrant, right?
The CYA. And that's totally reasonable. I don't blame anybody for doing that.
And that's a political reason, but it's also why I think McKinsey is going to be around a little bit longer because, and this is just a prediction, they're relationship-based, not technical-based. And so it's not like I'm saying, hey, I'm looking for a cheaper gas station. Oh, this guy across the street is 10 cents a gallon less. It's like, hey, I know this guy. He gives me great ballgame tickets. We go out to dinners and things such as that. And that's going to persist for quite a while. But you're right. It is slowly eroding away. And if we look at it in general, the whole industry of providing technical consulting and services, I've been doing that my whole career. I work as a CISO. I build tabletop exercises for clients. I do consulting. I help solve an impossible problem for a client. We got a patent on it. So I got my first patent on something. Big deal. But at the end of the day, you look around and go, some of the work, the grinding it out, could easily be handed over to AI. But I don't know if that come up with a creative idea that nobody else thought of that solves a business problem that looked very difficult is going to be forthcoming anytime soon. And so for people who are early in their careers, or for those of us who are mentoring people early in their careers, it's a little bit like, yeah, don't go study 4 years of programming to get a bachelor's degree. So you could go ahead and write Python and JavaScript and Rust and all kinds. It's not going to be your future. But what is the future going to be for these people getting into information technology and computer science? Because it certainly bleeds over into security, but more importantly, we don't want to squeeze the pipeline to the point where there's this big gap that is then going to progress over the years and there's going to be nobody there to do it.
Yep.
What do we do?
That came up if you've been on Twitter, Twitter lately, because that's where AI chat occurs. It seems like a lot of the pioneers in the space spent the holidays just reflecting on where they're at and where they're going. And they came to it's like simultaneously they all came to the realization that things are moving too fast for them. Mm-hmm. They look at what's going on and they realize they're 3 weeks behind, and they just finished this big project and it was amazing. And AI wrote the whole program and all the rest. But this new thing just came out over here. And that started a lot of introspection between them all. I shared some of that with my two sons and nephew, who are all programmers in some sense. Mm-hmm. They all have that fear. One of them, works at a big software company, and he matriculated up into being a manager, so he doesn't code. So he really feels like he's left out, right? He hasn't been using code, writing code, or using these tools. And yet I think he's in the best position. So Boris, who's the CTO at Anthropic, said that 100% of his code was written by AI in the last 3 months. Mm-hmm. And so he's a great example, right? He was a manager of lots of developers, but all of a sudden he's manager of AI agents that are doing the work. And I think that's I always think back to that Kaspersky, the last chess champion that was beat by Big Blue. Mm-hmm. And he was the first person to lose their job due to AI, right? So he's kind of a figurehead for this. And mm-hmm. And he just thought of augmented chess playing, which isn't a thing, but that was his way of justifying still being around. And I think that's where we're going to be. We're all going to be, AI is definitely everybody's co-pilot for programming, helps writers outline and do amazing stuff. And now it will be, we'll have a whole bunch of agents working for us, and we'll be orchestrating what they accomplish and what they do and how it's put to use.
Yeah, it's interesting. We take a look at the progression of where we've gone, and it's gone from like Isaac Asimov back in the 50s writing about story. Remember one of the books, I think it was Asimov, a little short story about how nobody remembers how to program anymore. And then somebody figures out, hey, here's how to do long division. And he hits down on the piece of paper and he cranks it out. And then these guys, Pentagon officials, are like, oh, this is amazing. Well, now we don't have to have computers fighting computers. We can go kill people again. And this guy's like, no, that's not why I invented this thing. And it was like, oh, yes, we now have new ways we can make humans, and we'll put them on the killer satellites and they can do calculations and they don't have to worry about EMP and everything else. And so it's a brave new world. And you and I, we grew up at a time where computers were just, they were there, but they weren't ubiquitous. Remember when the first PCs came out? My first computer was an Altair 8800 that we built in 1975 with a bunch of guys from my high school. We pooled all of our paperboy money to give you some context to buy this kit and put it together. And now there's one in the Smithsonian. It's been there for years. I don't think it's ours. And but Bill Gates looked at that and said, Microsoft. And Jobs looked at it and said, Apple. And we looked at it and said, hey, let's take it to a school assembly and make it play music, which we did.
I used a computer.
2 out of 3 succeeded.
I was using computers 4 years before Bill Gates was. It was a Link 8. My dad was a radiologist, but he got turned on to computers, so he bought a Link 8. It was big, full-size refrigerator. It was a predecessor to the DEC series, DEC 8, which became PDP 11 and on.
PDP 8.
Terminal and all this stuff. And it never did it occur to anybody to say, hey, that could be a career choice. It was not, ever. It was kind of funny.
And even cybersecurity was not. Back in 84, I told the Navy I want to go to NSA, and I got orders. I got my polygraph and everything else. And I got a nasty call from Washington. Lieutenant, what are you trying to do? I said, I want to go to NSA. Why would you do that? Do computer security. Now, here's the answer for the ages. The Navy has no need for computer security. You're going to go back out to sea. So, you know, here we are years later, and we found out that Dion was right and they were wrong. But so what? That's why people do startups. That's why people are heretics, because we do things that don't fit the mold. So as we do a little bit of prognostication here, you've got a deep understanding of the cybersecurity market, probably more so than any other person around. And I think that's a tremendous, great compliment for you, by the way. As we look at 2026 and forward, and the mergers, the acquisitions, the expansions, the deletions, et cetera, where do you think we're going? Are we going to be going to kind of a long tail market where all of a sudden, instead of having everybody buying lots of little things from here, we can end up with big, what's the market going to look like in the future? Or is it just going to be a continuation of what we got?
Yeah, there's going to be a dramatic change. And then there's going to be stuff going on as always. And the stuff that's going on as always is that the big companies are going to buy the little companies. And that's because a big company, I don't care how good you are at Palo Alto or Fortinet, you cannot predict the next winner. You cannot guarantee that you're going to have the next winner. So in any new category that comes about, so you are going to acquire it. And that's just the way it works. And you get used to it. Stop thinking you can develop stuff, because you can't. You're horrible at it. You always will be. So that goes on. But in the meantime, you know, I first wrote about AI and security last April, and I got pretty excited by it and predicted that by the end of 2025, there will be active deployments of SOC automation tools out there. And I was derided, you know, people just calling me out, saying that bullshit, AI can only predict the next token with a stochastic model. Now that's, and a lot of people are still in that mode. As always, whenever you talk about stuff and predict stuff like that, there's a vocal majority that slam me. And then I get all these calls from the people who are actually doing this stuff. And they say, wow, you are way off, but it's way off because we have already sold and are doing a million ARR in selling SOC agents to large enterprises. And I've kept tab with all those guys, and now they're at about three, each of them doing 3 million ARR in their first 12 months of being in business with a product. So I decided, well, let's write a book, since I'm not writing the other book, and let's just, a book that is the largest market research analysis ever done, because I already have all the data sitting in my platform. Wow. Let's just put it into a book form. Second week of November, I wrote most of it. And at the time there were 295 vendors that were included in it, descriptions of what they do and, you know, founders and funding and all the rest of that stuff. And then as I'm going through editors and all the rest, I keep having to add new ones because they come out of the woodwork. 2 a day is the average rate that not of them launching, but of me discovering them that they have launched. And quite often launching with tons of funding. So by the time the book's in print, which is only 4 weeks away, there'll be about just under 340 vendors in a space that only has 4,000 vendors in it. That's, of course, fastest growth in a category ever, right? But if you look at it, there's AI for there's AI security for protecting models, AI security for deploying guardrails, AI security for governance, AI security for applying AI to vulnerability management, applying AI to pen testing and breach and attack as a service kind of stuff. The subcategories are the same as they've always been, but because they're AI first, they're all lumped together. So my prediction is that I will not be able to produce another edition of that book. I won't be able to update it 6 months from now with 500 vendors in it, because by this time next year, every vendor will have legitimate claims to being AI security, because this is just taking over the industry. And there, maybe some of the post-quantum guys, just because all they have is an algorithm, maybe they won't be. But, 95% will be AI security vendors. They'll have applied AI everywhere in their own product. You'll be able to talk to a product, to every single product. It will actually do analysis on the back end. It'll have agents. You'll be able to bring your own agent. So, you don't necessarily want to use their models. You've got to... enterprise license to ChatGPT. Let's just use that.
And that's kind of one of the last questions we have as we're getting close to the end of the show here. Is the future cloud or local with respect to AI? Because with cloud, everything is centralized and I get the chance to take advantage of that nuclear power plant sitting next to this thing here. But at the same time, as we found out in the last few months, when Amazon goes down, Microsoft goes down, everybody goes down. Yeah. Or do we run our own local models where we don't have to worry about data poisoning, but we do have to worry about scalability? And what's the future going to be? Is it going to be a little bit of both, or where's the winner going to be?
Yeah, I hope it's local, right? Because it really feels like you can get the speed and accuracy and knowledge that you need locally. You may have to have a very, very heat-intensive computer. They're going to be very, very powerful computers, but hardware will catch up. And certainly the things you see NVIDIA introducing every 6 months are just mind blowing in their capacity, right? It creates that lust that I haven't felt for so many years. When I was young, right, you wanted the big tower computer with all the video cards in it, and just imagine having the compute power to run run the full size Llama model locally. That'd be fantastic. And then you can strip all the guardrails out and you can finally have an honest conversation about making nuclear bombs, which is something that appeals to all geeks.
Yeah. And at this point, I think I've kind of been a bit, my query would be like, how do I take my next startup and also get $100 million worth of funding and things like that? But I'll have to save that for another episode. So you got a book coming out. Give me the name of the book again. And where can people find it when it comes out in a few weeks?
Yeah. So it's just going to be available on Amazon. And
yes,
so you'll find it there. And it's called Guardians of the Machine Age.
Guardians of the Machine Age.
Yep. Subtitle, Why AI Security Will Define the Future of Digital Defense.
Fascinating. Well, Richard, this has been great. Wonderful to catch up with you again. I will be at RSA, so hopefully I'll see you there. So we won't have to wait another 13 years or so to catch up with each other. But as always, I love your analysis. I love the way that you have created an encyclopedic knowledge of the industry. And you're right, going from the rapidly changing market that we have out here to the concept of paper books almost seems like there's a massive disconnect. It's as if to say, hey, you need to sell an API through an AI engine to your back-end database, and that's how you're going to make your money going forward the next couple of years, because now it's dynamic. Yep.
The book is lost.
All right, you already got that.
We got that.
All right. Yep. Okay, so good to know. So thank you very much. So to our listeners out there, if you've enjoyed CISO Tradecraft, please go ahead and share it with somebody else. Let them know where you're getting your knowledge to help you with your career. If you're not following us, follow us on LinkedIn or on our YouTube channels, or even subscribe to us on our Substack newsletter that comes to you free of charge, as all of our other CISO Tradecraft material does, because we're looking to help you with your life and your career to help make the cybersecurity industry a whole lot better. So, Richard, thank you very much for being our guest on our show today. This is your host, G. Mark Hardy. And until next time, stay safe out there.